Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly from Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because, well, I wanted a place online for boaters to swap information and recommendations. Now that it's up and running, I've been getting out to meet my members, and you can hear me often on boat radio. As regular listeners will know, there's a plan to send me swimming with sharks. That's right, swim. I will not be in a cage. So now I'm in the middle of preparations for what will be the world's first live shark dive radio show. I'll be under 30 meters of water, 3 miles off the coast of Florida, in the company of renowned shark diver, conservationist, and filmmaker Jim Abernathy. And you'll be able to listen live from anywhere in the world just by switching on boat radio. You'll be able to watch too because we'll be fitted with cameras. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Well, right now I'm going through a series of refresher courses to make sure my scuba diving is up to scratch. The man who's making sure I know what I'm doing is Ryan Walton, co-owner of Deep Obsession Dive Charters in Jupiter, Florida. I met up with Ryan at his dive shop and asked him how he made the change from just diving to diving with sharks. Oh, and by the way, that noise you'll hear in the background is the compressor for filling the air tanks.
I started diving in the area about 6 years ago when I met Jim Abernathy, who was the first person to ever dive with sharks outside of a cage. Immediately, I was inspired, and it took on a new part of my career, which I started out as a scuba instructor only. As I found the passion for sharks, I stuck around the area. We have some of the best shark diving in the world right here. So that led me into this shark conservationist role and shark diver role to where about 6 months ago, Jim sat me down. At the time, I was then working for him and said it was time for him to start to retire from the charter business. And they had hoped that I would carry it on. Fortunately, we were able to pull it together. And me and a couple of other partners, like you said, took over the business as of June, the Deep Obsession, and we share a shop at this point, and it's going great. So that's how I got into this side of it. Thank you.
And so now you've been diving for how many years?
Just about 7 years total. I've been teaching. This is my sixth year of teaching.
And so you are you are diving with the sharks pretty much. What, every once a week, twice a week?
We're up to 3 days a week swimming with the sharks. We run charters every Monday and Thursday, and we've been getting requests for Sundays, Saturdays, and we're trying to accommodate those along with our normal schedule. But shark diving is the fastest growing side of the diving industry. So, yeah, our shark dives are 2 to 3 days a week at this point.
And why do you think that it's growing so fast?
Because sharks need help, and people are understanding that and wanting to help. And one of the biggest ways that people contribute to being an advocate is by taking these pictures, posting on social media, and telling your friends and coworkers and family members that sharks aren't what they have thought pretty much their entire life. So people catch on to the fact that they're helping, it's fun, they're doing something that other people aren't doing. And I think all those things combined make it what it is.
So you think social media has got the word around that maybe not every shark is like Jaws on that we have perceived it all to be?
Well, Jaws was the only shark that was like Jaws, actually. So, yeah, I think we're finally starting to get away from that. Even your TV series like Shark Week, they are really trying to focus on the science side of it and why sharks do what they do instead of just labeling everything as an attack. Quite frankly, an attack to me would be something consistent where they bite and come back for more. But if you look at statistics and you look at history, every shark bite is a bite and a release. We've never been a part of the food chain. So finally, again, the media, Shark Week, things like that, we're starting to look at sharks in the right light. Social media catches on and the people get excited.
So are you finding that you're getting attached to particular sharks now? You look forward to seeing them when you go down?
For me, yes. This area, like you said, the Jupiter shark diving area, I've known certain sharks now for almost 3 years. So you start to see them, and we get attached more than they're attached. Again, you got to stick to the science of it. So do these sharks recognize us? Yes. But are they recognizing me as that friend that strolled down the street and, you know, bought him an ice cream cone? No. What do they recognize me as? They recognize me for taking the hooks out of their mouth. Okay, so now I'm affiliated with a cleaning station. How do we conduct a shark dive? With bait. So we are simulating a feeding situation to lure them in. So if I start the dive by simulating a feeding situation, and they come in and get this hook removed from their mouth, they've immediately associated me in a positive manner. I'm helping them. So they associate with us in that science side of things. We absolutely feel affection towards these animals, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And does the fact that you are using bait, does that maybe get them overly excited where they would reach for something that might not be bait?
No. What you need to be careful of is not to look or act like bait in that situation. So
okay.
I'm going to...
Don't act dead.
Exactly. So you're very close there. It's dead, dying, diseased, and there's one more. The dumb. So how do we not end up in those situations? Well, one, we're all dark colors. Fish turns a white, yellowish color when it dies. So don't flail your hand through the water and flap it around like a dead fish would and then have the contrast of a dying fish. So those are the things right there. Looking like and acting like is something we can easily avoid, and they'd have no interest in us. They never have. We're large. Everything they eat is small. Oftentimes I get people on the boat and they'll say, well, don't we look like seals in these wetsuits? And my response is quite simple. Have you ever seen a seal here? No. So why would a shark associate us with a seal if the shark has never seen a seal in their life? There's a science to this. And once you crack the science and work with the science, you can dive with sharks all day long.
That must be a common thought, because I did actually mention that with my interview with John Hott. I was talking about the whole seal thing. So I think, yeah, I guess it's the education of Shark Week and everything else that we've seen. We're not quite sure what to expect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need to keep this forward motion that we have, keep the truth going, and not stray from it. I mean, we've got 100 million sharks being killed each year for the Asian shark fin trade, by commercial fishermen. Now you've got regular commercial fishermen running low on their catch, and they're hitting sharks just because they can. Two sharks a day. That's nothing in comparison to the 46 sharks a day that a commercial vessel is allowed to target. So we need this forward motion with sharks right now, because they are being taken away at a rate far beyond sustainability.
So you started diving 7 years ago. Did you have an interest before then? What was it that something clicked where you said, you know what, I want to do this?
It's funny you ask it like that, because my whole life I've been attached to the ocean. The diving side of it necessarily wasn't a thought at all. As a kid, I said I was going to be an oceanographer or a marine biologist. That was what I told my parents. When I moved to Florida, I went on a snorkel trip and said, I want to be down there. So honestly, that's what really set the tone and the interest for diving. And then when I got into diving, I was pretty natural at it. So it was kind of a no-brainer for me to keep it going, and here we are.
And so now you're doing it, what, how many times a week do you go about?
I dive every day. I'm a huge Miami Dolphins fan. So my family day is Sunday. We're down at the stadium watching football. But the rest of the year, it's 7 days a week. So 2 weeks from now, I'll get my 1 day off per week.
So do you, like, still love it, or is it getting exhausting having to get up every morning and go diving?
I love it. Being an owner is definitely more exhausting than just going out and playing with the sharks. But we have a saying in this industry, and I'm sure it goes for the boating world too, is that if we didn't love it, we probably wouldn't do it. It's one of those industries that you're in it for the pure passion. So it's there. My passion is definitely directed more towards sharks and shark conservation at this point, rather than the teaching or the everyday reef dive, I'll admit. But I still get joy in watching other people grow and watching their successes as they develop. So it's still there, but it's definitely more tiring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I met your son earlier. You have a baby. He looks like he's about one, right?
He turns one tomorrow. That was a good guess.
Yeah. Oh, he's adorable. And that was your wife, girlfriend?
Girlfriend, you could call it okay. Wife. I mean, I think some states would legally say that at this point.
At this stage of the game. And is she a diver as well?
She's a dive master, yes. I did her training about five years ago now.
And how did you guys meet? Is that how you met?
No, we moved together from Connecticut. Over 7 years ago, we met up there, and I had an opportunity to come down here, so we came together.
So, and then she jumped in with your passion and figured out that this was something that she loved as well.
It took her a little longer. She was not as much of a natural. She was one of those divers that I learned from becoming an instructor, because she needed more help. She needed more patience. There were certain things in the water, like mask skills, that needed to be touched on over and over again. And that's a totally normal situation that I needed to adapt to and be able to work with in order to help people accomplish their goal. So being able to watch her struggle through her first course and then be able to carry on and keep growing later was a lesson for me, but
I'm sure, because she was able to yell at you and tell you, wait, what, slow down, I can't do it that way.
there was a little bit of yelling, just a little bit, but
that's a good thing about being underwater, right?
It is. That's our break. We get into the silent world and you catch a break. So yeah, she was the opposite of me, but now she is one of the co-owners, as well as EJ. Okay. And Sana. Mm-hmm. There's four of us, so Her passion for it is there as well. I think it's just in a different direction. Where I took you, the Blue Heron Bridge, the last time we dove together, is probably one of her favorite dive sites. It's 20 feet deep at its max. There's seahorses, frogfish, octopus, and batfish.
It was beautiful.
Where else in the world can you say that all those animals are there, other than maybe the Philippines? So that's her type of diving. And for me, I'd prefer to be with the sharks all day long.
Has she been with the sharks? Of course she's been with the sharks, right?
No.
She hasn't.
She won't do the shark dive with me yet. It's just really not
her
thing.
Oh, that makes me feel fine.
It's not for her. She doesn't get the joy out of it. That also comes into being a photographer. She holds a degree in photography. And I truly think she prefers the macro, the smaller life, and the things you got to look for. And for me, I do more video and wide angles, so it's the bigger animals. And, well, sharks are definitely bigger than a seahorse. So that's where we don't end up on the same boat, is we have totally different interests there. So she just hasn't come out for it.
You know what? I get it, because when I got certified, I had children. And there's something about when you have kids, it makes you pull back and doing something that's risky. It's a natural thing. So maybe that's one of the reasons that's holding her back.
Yeah, and it's a long day. We got to go out there. Yeah. And somebody like me who, when I'm out there, I'm out there. If there's sharks, well, I'm probably in the water with them. So having Koa and pretty much bringing him wherever we go and letting him live out the adventure too, that is a long day on the water, 9-10 hours for him. So that's probably one of her main excuses at this point. I'll use that word, excuse. But I'd say that's why she hasn't done it.
So that noise that we're hearing in the background, what is that noise?
That is EJ filling tanks.
Another one of the owners, right?
EJ is one of the owners. So basically, we've got a fill station out back of our shop. It's designed so that you don't have to be in contact with the tanks that you're filling. You go out, you set them up out back, and then you can come into our inside operation station, and you can work your knobs from in there to do your filling. So we hear some of the tanks being bled off back here in between batches.
So a lot of people, like as you're talking, a lot of people, the route that they take is to finish high school, go to college, and go on after that. And you decided, you know what, that's not the path I want to take. So what was the deciding factor in that for you? How was school and high school and all that?
Well, for me, it was high school. I was definitely an outcast. I did well in the school portion, but socially just wanted more than the typical high school environment. So basically convinced my parents at 16 to let me join the military. And I went on to get my diploma equivalency and at 17 was able to enlist in the Army. So I did. And that was my path. Unfortunately, I had a minor knee injury and some anxiety issues that I dealt with in the military that cut that career short, but opened the door to this career. And the discipline and the life responsibilities and the life-setting goals, those skills that you learn in the military are irreplaceable. So that was my path. I mean, I see college students these days and graduates that are on waiting lists for their jobs with thousands of dollars of college loans that they've built up, and here we are. And I mean, you can be a dive instructor for 10 grand or less over the course of the time that you build up for it. So for me, the path was all about having fun. And people, when they ask me, you know, how are you doing today? What's going on? It's not much, just living the dream. And that was something that was, I guess, the goal was no matter what, I was going to do something that I loved. And that's my life philosophy is if you do something you love, you do it better.
Did you find in high school, because like you say, you were an outcast, because you're thinking in a different way than everybody else, was that ever adapted for you, or was it just something you always had to fight against when you were in school?
It was something to fight against. I was ready at that point to make money, to be on the outside world. I thought that a lot of the things I was learning were irrelevant, and I've proven they were. it just those type of things later on, you look back and I love saying I was right. I am a business owner now, and it was a goal to be one by 27 years old, and I'm 27, and we signed on those papers 17 days before
my 27th
birthday.
Isn't that crazy how you can do manifest these things in life?
So to me, looking back, being in school, I'd be bored. I'd start drawing or writing something else, you know, and I was never really into it. I needed something that I loved, that I could pay attention to, that I could be into. And at that time, we had it was firefighting. There was a cadet firefighting program in Connecticut where I was and where I went to school, where at 14 years old, you could start shadowing these firefighters. So for those couple of years, I think that was my taste of the outside world and feeling like a grown-up and being a part of that brotherhood and just being a part of something. And then that was definitely my motivation to join the military at the time, because this was 2006 and 2007. So motivation being, you know, 9/11, seeing that as a kid, and then becoming a volunteer cadet at 14, 15, and 16 years old, you're pretty good on yourself, you know, you're confident. And for me, school just wasn't it. So that was my program, but it was outside of school. It wasn't in school.
And how were your parents about all this? Like, what did, is your dad passionate about the water, or he just was, listen, do what you need to do, or he was strict? Or
he more so let up at that point because of the understanding and the commitment that I was willing to put into the military. My mom was the one who was more so disappointed. No mom wants their kid to be a high school dropout. And I was ready to embrace it and show everybody that I was going to get to life way before they did. And I tell people all the time, I was training in a Connex while these guys were at prom their senior year. So I was off firing an M4 and training, and they're dancing the night away. So that's what I wanted. And my parents knew that. I was over school. I didn't need to go to prom. Homecoming wasn't for me. I wanted to be a part of something. And they knew it. But basically the agreement was the GED test for Connecticut. I had to pass a pretest. And if I did that, they would sign me out of school and into the military. And I passed with flying colors. And we went and I took my ASVAB for the military. And that was set. And the ball was rolling.
I think it's very difficult as a parent to accept that your kid is not going to do what everybody else is doing. But you know them, and you know in your heart this is what they have to do. So it's a very pull-push type situation to end up in as a, let's see what you do at yours.
Absolutely.
2016.
It is, yeah. I just want to be supportive. You know, like I said, we're a football family. We're a diving family. So he's got a great community around him to grow up with, and my hope is that the diving community is stronger, more accepting than the average high school community. And no matter what, if you're a part of this or football, another brotherhood, I mean, I don't mean to go back there, but between the two, you feel like you belong. You feel like you're a part of something. So that's my hope for any kid, is that you're not feeling like you don't have somewhere to go or something to do. There's communities out there.
Do you feel like now you want to mentor kids that are troubled, or do you feel like you have a kind of connection with them?
Yeah, I've begun to a little bit. I love speaking to people. I use sharks as the platform because people, let's say a child who doesn't have a best friend or a group of friends, they may be motivated the same way to stick up for something that's being picked on. And right there, sharks are being picked on worldwide. Again, 100 million sharks per year are getting killed. So if I can reach these kids that maybe don't have something worthwhile to fight for, then they're the future. So
what is it that you can do to do that? Like, how do you get in touch with the kids? And how are you helping the sharks, other than, say, doing the dives, which is huge? But yeah. What other aspects can be approached?
So I'll start with the first part, is it all starts with education, changing the perception. So then the second answer to that would be, what am I doing? I've been doing some traveling lately. I went up with some new mentors of mine, Joe Romero and Brian Raymond. They are two of the guys that have been on Shark Week the last 4 years. Went up to Rhode Island to learn from them about blue and Mako sharks. And while I was there, I discovered shark fins being nailed to telephone poles by fishermen. That was their prize. That was the ego contest. There's other ways I could put it, but I'm going to keep it right. It is just their way of saying, look what I did, and it's wrong. It's disgusting. And we're teaching kids that it's acceptable. So we've been working on a short documentary called Changing Perceptions. And basically it's where I travel up to Rhode Island. I'm down here. We're showing these fins nailed to fishing poles and boats going in and out. And, you know, I walked up and I was filming it, and the fisherman right there is singing, "Let the bodies hit the floor." It's this mindset that I'm out to change, that I'm out to talk to people and say, listen, you were wrong. You are wrong. And here's what's right. And if we don't change it, we're in big, big trouble. So those are some of the things I'm doing. I've got videos all over the internet. My photos are all over. And again, just trying to reach people and show them the beauty of an animal that too often we're seeing with a hook stuck in the side of their mouth.
What is your YouTube channel so people can go online and look at your videos?
I believe it's under just my name, Ryan Walton. If you type in Ryan Walton Sharks, I promise one of my videos will come up. I believe the username on there is FL as in Florida, Diver 89. So if you search any of that, you should absolutely find some of my work on YouTube.
Okay, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to doing a couple more refreshers and using Ocean Technology Systems full face mask. I'm not totally looking forward to that. That's going to be a weird experience, but I'm going to take it on. And I don't know, I probably have about I feel comfortable after maybe three more dives, I think, and then I'm ready to go down there.
I think that's good, and I'm going to be right there anyways. Like I said, I know the animals very well, their behavior, their actions, so I think you're ready. We're just going to build a little more confidence, and we're going to get you in the water with them, hopefully as many as possible.
I'm excited. All right. Thanks a million, Ryan.
Thank you.